It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 633. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Remember to use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can send me email, questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Also sponsoring this podcast is Malwarebytes TechBench Toolset. It's an all-in-one package of utilities to help you diagnose, repair, and secure Windows PCs. Tonight is a special show. I have guests from Malwarebytes, Michael and Alex. I want to thank you for joining me tonight and taking the time out. And why not, start by telling us what you do for Malwarebytes.
Hey, this is Michael Sherwin. Thanks for having us on the show, Mike. This is fantastic. We're out here in sunny California, just south of all the fires that you've heard about. And what we do here at Malwarebytes is we lead our TechBench team. So that is comprised of some really cool stuff that we're going to share with you later this show. I come from a long line of computer repair kind of history. So I've been in the industry about 20 years or so, done some work for the Air Force, done some work for larger repair companies. And I just love making software, making tools, and serving all of you techs that are out there.
That's great. And Alex?
Yeah, so I'm Alex Smith, and I have the fortunate/unfortunate role of supporting Michael Sherwood. I'm the technical product manager for TechBench here at Malwarebytes. So I kind of am the guy that makes the tool set kind of happen with the development team. Do a little QA work and do a lot of creating the user stories and coming up with all the cool ideas and features and feedback with the tool set. And I've got a, similar to Sherwood, I've got a very long background in computer repair, working for a large computer repair company for many, 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 many years and doing training and some similar tool set stuff over there. But I love making technical stuff that technicians can use to fix computers. It's kind of a passion of mine, and I love solving problems, and I get to do that all the time here at Malwarebytes.
That's great. Help us out with, I mentioned the tool set and the TechBench tool set. I've never really deep dived into what it's all about. Help us understand, what is the TechBench tool set?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So I'll take you on a little bit of a journey. And those of you that are on the call, I see Tom, you're on the call. Nice to see you on the internet again. You'll know that I'm super straightforward and just kind of blunt. And we here at Malwarebytes did a bunch of really cool things for kind of the technical crowd in our early days. If you think, back in 2008, and then we kind of forgot about making tools. We made some other tools for the enterprise, and then we made some more tools. We saw kind of the first version of TechBench, and then we forgot about them and focused on some other areas. And Alex and I joined the team a couple of years ago to really put a stake in the ground to say, one, we want to invest in the technical community, and then two, we want to have a team here that kind of knows what it's like to do your job every single day. So we've comprised a team, and all of us on the team have a technical background, or if they don't, I've made them actually go out to tech shops and do jobs and see what it looks like in your shoes every single day. So we put TechBench together, and it's really a combination of a reseller program, a community, some really early beta software. We've got three cool pieces of software we're going to show you today. And then, of course, the flagship tool set that you mentioned there, Mike.
Yeah, it's great. And I love it. And I talked about it, especially the opportunity to put us in a position to resell the product. If you know, we get behind Malwarebytes and we like Malwarebytes, then you can sell it and get a really good price to be able to go out there and then help us make money, which is which is really good. So the tool set, I know you just released, I think, another update. Is that because of the fall creators update? And are you like trying to align yourself with, you know, the all these updates that Microsoft keeps putting out? Do you then plan to have another update, you know, with the way you're working with Windows?
I'll take the question. So we had to update our tool set. Actually, we've had two updates since it happened. But we kind of try to plan ahead. We get an idea of when the next release of Windows is coming out. And some of the technology that's inside of our tool set, basically, we make sure that we're applying the right fixes for the right build, the right edition of Windows. In order to do that, we have to actually kind of profile the actual real operating system once we get access to the final release version of Windows. So we kind of knew that we were going to have a release around this time when it was actually finally out. And once we got our hands on it, we spent a good several days making the code changes that we needed to in order to make the tool set run properly on the Falls Creators update. And I think we actually launched it about almost a week before it actually hit general availability of the Fall Creators update. And then earlier this week, we had another release to fix a small little bug that we had run into. But we tried to coincide it with the goal was to release before Microsoft did. And I feel like we kind of got in there and did that.
Yeah.
And see that in the future too. Anytime there's a new major release of Windows, there will be a new version of the tool set to help support that new release.
This is great. I have so many questions. We could be here all night, but I'm going to, I would like to open it up. What would you like to talk about within the tool set? Can you just give another summary of some of the things that it helps us? I use it for, and I'll tell you, one of the biggest things I like is the scanning the issues of the PC. It's quick.
Yep.
It's fast. It gives me a quick, or my techs, a very quick snapshot of what's going on with that PC, because we could be walking into, we're not sure, is it infections, is it malware, is there a hardware issue? We're not sure. We get the call, we go out, we work on it, and getting that quick snapshot of what an idea of what's going on. And it's funny, you would love to hear this. One system, I ran it, and there were no issues. It was the only computer. There was only one computer. There was literally no issues, because usually there's tons of...
Always tons.
Yeah, crashes and different services that aren't starting. And I just thought it was very unusual. My son and I, we were really shocked that there was this laptop with no issues. But the... Where do you want to? I know you're looking at a lot of different things. Maybe share where you want to go with this. Like what are you looking to maybe add on to it? And what's the goals here for the tool set?
Yeah, if we look back at what we were trying to do. So having been a tech for a long time, we know that there's no silver bullet in what tool you're using, whether that's Windows diagnostics, Windows repair, maybe some boot disks that you're using, or even some malware utilities out there. You know, it's no secret. There's multiple tools, and then sometimes multiple tools are needed. So we said, what are shops doing well and what are shops not doing well with right now? And we worked with about 200 shops or so, where we hung out with them on a daily basis. And over about a 6-month period, we really learned that the biggest area of opportunity is that when a client was bringing their machine into these shops, the technician was taking feedback from the client, and they were saying, machine is slow, it's booting up, et cetera, et cetera. And most of the time they would go, okay, let me jump right into some, malware remediation or some light hardware diagnostics. And, the analogy I like to use is, these clients came to the hospital with a headache, and instead of giving them some aspirin, checking their blood pressure, and kind of doing some triage things, they immediately took them into surgery. So everybody got brain surgery for having a headache when, maybe a couple simple aspirin would help them solve the issue. So we invented something that we call the Inform screen, and that's the first screen that comes up with the tool set. And it gives you a quick snapshot within just a few seconds of kind of what's up with the machine. And it allows you as the technician to make that first diagnostic step the right one. So we call it step zero, and it gives you a better leg up before you actually start investing time, whether it's hardware or software fixing that you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's great. I can't tell you how many times I went down a road and didn't run any tests on the hard drive to find out it was the hard drive.
You
know?
Yeah.
Or I don't know why, but years ago it would be, you know, we didn't look for malware fast enough, you know, and then we found out that that's what was, you know, slowing everything down. So no, that's an excellent way to begin. So if you were, we got techs out here who are going to be using the tool set. What's your process for using your software? So we got the inform screen and we got that snapshot. Where should we go next? What's the logical step next?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. So let's assume that the inform screen comes back and it says, you know, kind of all systems go. It looks kind of what your all systems go, meaning the issue is what the client said and you've kind of confirmed it. You know, the scanning portion of our tools that really is split into two areas. One is malware, and then the other is Windows issue scanner. So if you feel like the next step is moving into malware or doing some issue scanning, we do recommend that you jump in there. And we usually recommend the issue scanner first, because not only with the issue scanner do we look at kind of common Windows issues, but we also do a diagnostic on them, which is a critical aspect that so many of these fix-it tweaking utilities just simply don't do. And it's not a negative a dig on any of the utilities that are out there. This has unfortunately been part of our industry since even when I wrote my first, you know, regfix utility back in, you know, 97 to 98 when I was in the Air Force. Nobody really did a proper diagnostic. It was the technician's kind of feelings and opinions. And then it was a very static registry file or a bash file. And many of those technologies are still used today, 20 years later. So our issue scanner, what we did is we profiled over 175 operating systems, looked at all of the startup states, the registry keys that are important for these issues. And then we profiled all of them and actually compressed it down, if you can believe it, into about a 5 meg file. And in this 5 meg file is where all of the right settings exists. So we check your system, we check our settings, and if any of those have any differentials that don't line up, we present you with the fix, not only for the issue, but exactly for the operating system, the bitness and the hardware that you've got on your machine.
That's great. I have a quick question about the malware scanner. Is that the same engine that if that PC was running Malwarebytes 3 latest version, is that doing the same thing?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. So it is and it is not. So the engine that you see inside of our malware engine inside of the toolset is based on the 2X engine. But from a scanning and remediation standpoint for that specific command line aspect, it's about 90% the same thing. Where you'll see additional benefits in our 3.0 engine is on the protection side. A majority of what came to life in our 2.0 to our 3.0 upgrade, if you will, was really flipping on all of the technologies that we had bought over the last 4 years, which be our anti-exploit, our web exploits, our ransomware, as well as a few other technologies. But from a scanning side, you're mostly using the exact same scanner. And then you pair that with our ADW cleaner utility, which ADW cleaner now does everything JRT does. So again, use the scanner inside the tool set plus ADW cleaner, and you've got a rock solid scanning process from us.
Yep. As a matter of fact, that's when I head into a new client, that's exactly what we do. We do a quick tune up and then we take a look at the state of their antivirus, anti-malware on the machine. And then that's where it's always an opportunity to put a Malwarebytes license and then move on and you know, do it. We do a basic cleaning, you know, where it's JRT adware cleaner. And what I like to do is put the full Malwarebytes and then do a scan with that. We haven't been using the quick scanner there because we've always had Malwarebytes running the full version. And that's why I wanted to know, is there an advantage or disadvantage of running that from within the tool set if we already got it installed? And I think you kind of answered that. If I have the 3.0, you know, you go with that.
If you've got the 3.0 on there, you've got the protection modules, which kind of supersede the scanner, if that makes sense. Now, if something did slip through or you found something with ADW cleaner, for example, you guys just send us an email. The ADW cleaner inventor and team works on our team here. So he sits literally 5 feet from here, me at the office. So if you've got a problem with that or a problem with, you know, something that our program's not doing, shoot us a note and we get it right over to the devs almost immediately.
I will say this. If they're running JRT, and I don't know what's changed in Adware Cleaner, we're seeing less after we run, you know, JRT. We're seeing less, I guess, things being caught in Adware Cleaner. Not that there's, not that it's missing anything, but we're just not, I'm not seeing the lists and lists from like the old Adware Cleaner when I would run it. And I don't know, is JRT catching more? And you know what? Help, here you go. Help me out. Now that you own both, what's the difference? What's JRT doing differently than Adware Cleaner?
Yeah, so I'll say this hopefully super loud and clear for everybody on the phone. You no longer need to use JRT. JRT has been 100% incorporated into ADW Cleaner. Now, there's a small caveat on that. There are a few what we call benign or empty temp files and directories that JRT may clean, but it's a very small percentage. But from an Adware, PUM, and PUP perspective, ADW Cleaner 100% does what JRT does. And we incorporated that in the February timeframe, and about 90 days before we released that to the public, all TechBench members got access to that early tool, right. And they were the ones who actually tested it and made sure that it works. So we haven't officially put out a news release for JRT end of lifing, but you'll actually see that here in the next month or so.
I was just going to ask you, you beat me to it, which is, are we, you know, sunsetting JRT, you know?
100% we are. Yep.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Hey, less tools I got to run that they, you know, that's great. We've ran the cleaners. We've ran what next, I guess, with the tool set, or that's pretty much it. And then we just kind of act on the results of what we've just ran with the scanners and then take it to the next, you know, the next step, which is, you know, start diagnosing and see, you know, is this, you know, now we got to dig deeper. If it's a hardware problem, is it memory? Is it a hard drive? Is it, you know, something else. I got a question on the hard drive. When you're seeing the smart errors, is that all you're grabbing? Is the smart errors on the hard drive, or are you doing, I guess, something like what Crystal Disk Info does, or what are you doing with the hard drive?
Yeah, so you're talking about when you run it, the issue scanner side of things. So
correct.
The kind of the, just to take one step back, and then I'll directly answer the disk question because they kind of go hand in hand.
Yep.
So the idea of the issue scanner, not only was it to identify like Windows OS issues, but to try to bubble up things that Windows gathers for us, whether it's through event logs or going one step further on the disk side and actually reading the smart attribute tables on the actual storage device itself. So when it comes specifically to disk errors, we look in multiple locations. So we look for NTFS and disk errors that Windows is recording and storing in the event log that Windows doesn't like tell users about. But if you know how to dig through that, you can go find them. But we use the issue scanner to go check for those things and bubble them up to you. So we check those. We also check if Windows has detected a potential hard drive failure, because there's a component of Windows that will do that as well. We'll bring that up if we see that. But on top of that, we go one step further, very similar to Crystal Disk Info, where we're getting the actual smart attribute table. So we're actually going, hey, has this smart attribute been tripped? How many smart errors are there? How many smart errors have occurred over the lifetime of the drive? And if those hit certain levels, we actually report that back to you. And in the issue scanner, you can actually click on them and dive deep into the actual errors themselves. Because when it comes to failing hard drives, you can't like say 100% this hard drive is definitely bad. It's ready to be replaced. Right. We can give you enough information where you'll be able to make the more informed decision of, yes, there is a failure here, or I see all these errors. What do they mean? Okay, I need to run additional hardware diagnostics that are specific to this drive. But we're able to get that smart information within a couple seconds. So
yes.
It's really beneficial at kind of giving you that real quick diagnostic of maybe there's something wrong with this hard drive.
Yep. And to me, hard drives are so inexpensive that if there's even a question it's bad, I'm saying, look, we want to clone your drive to a new drive and we got to get out of this drive, because why take the chance? It's going to fail, you know?
Mike, we've heard that time and time again. One of the biggest use cases, some of our shops that are seeing malware jobs or maybe some software jobs kind of diminish, you know, with Windows 10 and the better protection and maybe even Malwarebytes protecting you. We've seen a lot of them take advantage of the issue scanner, and anybody coming in with an old hard drive, they just run this, check to see if anything's going on, and it's an easy upsell to get them stepped into either an SSD, or maybe they've got a 4.5, 5-year-old drive that you've got that feeling, you're like, this thing doesn't feel right. run our scanner, you can kind of start seeing four or five different elements. You're like, wow, this actually does need, going back to my other analogy, going, you know, right into surgery is what you need to do. So shops upselling their hard drive replacement or upgrading to SSDs is a huge thing we see.
Absolutely. I always take advantage of that. And my team, when I say my team, there's two other techs, but that will when we go out there, that's what we're looking at. And even existing clients, you know, that we have on retainer, where when we see the slightest possibility of a problem, that's an easy upsell to an SSD. And yep. I always put, you know, we clone it, use Acronis, or clone it, put it in, and it's like a brand new computer anyway. It's a major upgrade just going to an SSD. I can't roll out anything today without an SSD. I've breathed new life into systems, and clients appreciate that. And this is for everybody listening that, and they've heard me talk about this, which is, what a great way to where they don't have to spend another $1,000 on a new machine, and you might get another year or two just by going an SSD, adding a little more RAM, getting it cleaned up. You know, it's a great way to help someone with the system life cycle of their office, that they actually justify paying you, because now they're going to save a little money, you know, for long term, you know, for at least, you buy them a couple of years before they have to, you know, spend for more money. So quick story last week. I have a client that has the record for most malware bites infections found. And my son called me over, because he's in one office, I'm in the other, in this, and this is a brand new client. And we actually went to New York for this client. And it's a long story, because they're buying a company of one of my current clients is being purchased by a company in New York. And they brought us out there, and we're now their IT, because it went so well. One machine, and I want to know your record. The most I've ever seen is like 2,000. And that's been sort of our, you know, 2,000 infections. I'm not kidding. It went over 17,000.
Wow.
And I've never seen that. And it just started churning. And I didn't know. It was almost like it kept replicating as it was running, you know. And it just, I just never seen a number that high for finding, you know, threats on a system. And it was just amazing. And it was like, it was so long. We left, and I put instant house call on it so I could remote in later when we get back home, because it was taking so long to remove it. We were able to remote in and then, you know, do the reboot, you know, so it could, and then test it when it came back online. What's the most you've ever seen, or do you even know that? Or I was just curious.
I have a huge unfair advantage too. Although I look like I'm 18, I've been doing this for 20 years. So I've seen all the old school original ones where they used to cheat and they would count cookies and you know, all that nonsense. And then in my previous role, we would fix millions of computers a year. So I would see all the kind of aggregates, but easily in the, you know, 600,000-800,000 range, you could see in a system like that, even without cookies. I remember one personal machine I had. This was in the early 2000s, maybe 2002. And it was one of the first file infectors that targeted MP3s. So it was going after kind of the Napster, you know, post-heyday to try to infect people stealing music. Yep. And it was doing exactly what you said. It was basically replicating live as I was on the system. It was almost like an early ransomware, but it was essentially corrupting each of the MP3s. And it was 17, 18,000 or something like that. And this lady was just distraught, because she'd spent this whole time, you know, burning legitimate MP3s from her CDs over. And I didn't know what to tell her at that point, other than, you know, this is good luck. You've got to redo these, because these are all corrupt MP3s now.
Great question from Uncle Al in the chat, which is, should you quarantine or delete the found malware from a Malwarebytes scan? Like, what's your recommended process? Because it's going to quarantine them first.
So there's probably two schools of thought on this. You know, if it's an average, you know, residential client, or, you know, maybe even a small office, kill it, just get rid of it, you know, quarantine it, get rid of it. They're not going to need it. Now, if it's a larger enterprise, and maybe you've got to do some forensic analysis on it, or, you know, some sort of post breach kind of work, you may want to keep it there just for the IT staff, or if you are the IT staff, to take a further look at it. But residential, small businesses, just get rid of it.
Yep. I and that's sort of that's my, I never described it like that, but you're right. That's how I approach this, because here a tip on Adware Cleaner, and this was way back. My son normally didn't like, he vetted everything, but when it said it was going to delete this empty directory, he just deleted it. Well, a piece of software stopped working for that particular business that is a title insurance company, and Title Express needs that directory. Although there was nothing in it at the time, it needs that directory. And so we kind of killed Title Express with a system. Now, once we realized that and recreated the directory, but that was a great caution where, you have to take a look at what it's going to remove or quarantine. Yep. And you just kind of do an intelligent browse. And that's why I always recommend do quarantine and wait a little bit before I empty the quarantine. So this way, you know, there might be something in there that which I always thought was very difficult, which is to you at Malwarebytes see something that I agree with that's bad. It may not be bad. Like, I think the Ask toolbar is bad, but there are people clearly in the world that use it or it wouldn't be around. So what's bad to you is bad. And that's always been the problem, I thought, in the history with any virus programs. It's like they can't make that call, you know? So and that was like the beginning of JRT when I first started using it. It was like, you know, they're ripping out what I really feel is junk, you know? Yeah. And that's why I think it's great that you have a log file. So are there any tips in the Malwarebytes product in the version 3 that you can share or anything that we should be, you know, looking at? An example, I'm looking at mine right now as I open it up, and you have the web protection, the exploit protection, Malwarebytes protection, ransomware protection. Web protection sometimes gives us a little, you know, we kind of have to do a clean and remove and reinstall of Malwarebytes. And does web protection eliminate the need for like the old web of trust?
Yeah, that's a fair question. So I think, you know, the way that I look at it, and this is my personal answer, how I, you know, still service my clients, whether it's my family or my friends or, you know, folks that I'm helping, it's really determining, you know, what's their level of computer need? Are they a business? Are they just a home user? And then figuring out what portions of the layered security approach I need to deploy. So if it's, you know, an average user, you know, having a router, having a pop-up blocker, having some sort of like anti-scam extension in their browser, which hint, hint, we might have one for our TechBench users that helps with tech support scams. Really understanding what portions of my stack do I want to roll out to all of, you know, my clients, and, you know, whether it's an antivirus, traditionally like a Windows Defender built in is really, really becoming a solid tool. Microsoft's done a really good job there. And then of course the Malwarebytes utility. So it all depends on the situation. And it's a hard answer to just, you know, say use this or don't use that. I'd love to analyze the situation and then come up with the right solution for each client.
I'm of the ilk. I block everything until you may need it, and then we'll evaluate whether we got to let something through or turn it off. You know, I'd rather opt for the safer route on when it comes to that with my users. And just like, you know, a firewall, I want to keep it on. And if there's an application that's needed that stops working, well, let's now fix that. See that it's working with the firewall on, you know, because I don't want to disable it. So, can we talk about, I want to share this, and I just thought it was the first time that this happened, and it was Tuesday, and I hope you're going to laugh at this. So I'm trying to run Skype, and I have to do an update, and I haven't done an update in a long time. So an update is coming in, and I said, go ahead, install it. And my Malwarebytes anti-bundle pops up and unchecks the boxes for the Bing and something else. I forget. There's two defaults that Skype wants to install. And by the way, and I've been using that for a long time. That's the first time I actually seen it. I don't know if I'm that careful or whatever, you know, that it actually popped up and stopped and unchecked the boxes. And I thought that was cool. And Can you talk about that? Like, when is it going to be like final release, and when can we, you know, see more of the Malwarebytes anti-bundle?
Oh, you're killing me here. So you pulled a Dave Greenbaum, as we say.
Yeah.
So our anti-bundleware, for those on the call that are not part of the TechBench program, that's one of the three kind of internal utilities that we have that we've been working on for about a year. We've got two versions of it. But that is some exclusive software that we released to our TechBench members.
Right.
Like I said, some have had it for about a year, some have had it for maybe 6 months. But we've got a real-time protection module, which Mike just mentioned. And that really helps with software having kind of like side-loaded packages or the checkboxes that you just mentioned there. And then we also have a separate utility, which is our remediation engine, which is very much focused on what we consider bundleware. So it's not malware per se. It's not a virus per se. It's not junkware. It's not ADW cleaner type pum and pups. It's that next category that all of us are way too familiar with, and all of that OEM bundle stuff that comes on there. So from a legal perspective, you know, we want to be very careful in defining what is or is not in all of these categories. And our anti-bundleware helps you make the decision of how you want to use the utility. But ultimately, the definitions are cloud-driven. So it's all of you saying this should be here or that shouldn't be here. And then when the next tech uses it, they get the benefit of kind of the hive mentality of what should or should not be on the machine.
I love that. And that's why I asked you if I was at the unconvention, if I was allowed to talk about this. And you said, yes,
you are.
So what's great is, and I wanted to get that out there, because these are the little nuggets that why you should join this program for the TechBench. And it's important. What I like was that I had the option. You uncheck it by default, pop up the warning. And I completely agree with that, to where it's as a default, the end user will just go next unchecked. But if they really want it, then they can check it and say, I want that. Because I hate that McAfee comes down every time you do Flash or oh my God, there's so many things. The Java, oh yeah, we want to make Yahoo your toolbar, you know, your default browser, your default, you know, homepage and stuff. You know, these are the things that drive my clients crazy. And that's why, you know, seeing software that we're going to, you know, in that direction that is going to help us. That's one less phone call, one less threat I got to worry about, or, you know, slowing down someone's system. That's great. I like that. So, I mean, so really you're like what I used to talk about and said, the Unchecky, which is a program that, I haven't used in a while, but it is out there. Is that sort of, or you're going further than that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's got a similar set of features to it, at least from our real-time protection. And, you know, what we've really tried to do is we have kind of a small team. We call it the incubation team, and it's the team that's kind of comprised of, I'd say, about 10 of us that just come up from a whole bunch of different walks of kind of computer security and you know, PC technician and Mac technician as well, kind of walks of life. And we just kind of put our heads together and say, what's the industry kind of missing? And is there an opportunity for us to bring a tool? And again, all three of these tools we're talking about are free for our TechBench users to use unlimitedly, by the way. And we try to put some prototypes together and just test the waters. And even this week, we've got kind of a mini summit happening here right now, and we have two new prototypes. So we actually are not ready to share those, but they're on completely different platforms that you wouldn't expect Malwarebytes to kind of show up on. And we're really, really excited. I'm actually excited to go home tonight, put it on my device, and hopefully that will turn into something that we can share with you in the not too distant future.
No, that's great. And, you know, you mentioned Mac, which is great. Last night, it's a true story. I get a call from a client that their daughter her MacBook Pro is just slow, and she's trying to do something. She's a senior in high school, and she's got to get some things ready to prep to send for a college application. And she said, Mike, what can you do? And I walk her into getting me remoted in. And the first thing I do is I download Malwarebytes. And again, this is the first Mac. It found 24 threats. And I was like, wow. I was like, there was all kinds. And it took, you know, normally it runs pretty quick. This thing was taking a few minutes to run because it was finding a lot of stuff. And the threats just come. It was like, I'll never forget, and this is what makes it all worth it. And by the way, I was able to sell a license, you know, for the premium version. After the reboot, she's running and she says, "This is like a new machine." And that, having her parents hear that, who's my client, and her father is a business client of mine, you know, where I take care of his office. That was tremendous, and it was a quick win. And for everybody that's listening to this, because I have a predominant Windows users, you know, that listen to this. If you're afraid of the Mac side, here you go. You got a piece of software that you can use to make you look like a hero by, and you don't even need to really know the Mac, you know, to be able to run this. And so that was nice. I needed to share that. Where are you taking this on the Mac side? And are you going to complement, are we going to see more of these other side other products and things for the Mac? Or you don't think it's needed? I just, you know, can you share some, I guess, Mac future or, you know, things that you're heading for the Mac?
Yeah, definitely can share some of the stuff that we're going with right now. So the previous kind of earlier Malwarebytes anti-malware for Mac was definitely more of a scan it when you can on demand type of thing. And just recently we moved to the Malwarebytes for Mac to kind of complement and provide almost like the Windows experience on the Mac side. So real-time protection, yep, similar user interface to Malwarebytes 3 that's in Windows. And you're going to continue to see new features released over the next year or so that are going to add similar functionality that you're used to seeing on the Windows side into the Mac world.
Great.
You'll probably see like the web protection that's on the Windows side, I think, is probably one of the first newer features that you'll see come into the Mac product. But that story you told where you did actual remediation on the Mac, I want to kind of guess let the cat out of the bag a little bit. So we're going to release a portable version of the Mac remediation utility to TechBench members as a Christmas present this year.
Oh, so, that is awesome. Oh.
Yeah, so TechBench members will have free access to that as well. So that way they'll have a portable utility that they can run on a Mac to remove malware.
That is great. I'm really glad to hear that because I don't have a lot of Mac, but that's like leaving money on the ground and we're not bending over and picking it up, you know, to not do Macs and embrace Macs. I have a couple offices that I have a dental office that the dentist, the orthodontist, he loves doing everything himself, but now he's getting too busy and he's just got an iMac in every room, you know, and a real Mac server, you know. So I'm like the only tech trusted that can go in there and actually do work with him for him. So it's really nice. So I have a few Macs and really it's the Mac that is the CEO, COO, or CFO that they have at home and their kids. And that's why I wanted to share that story, because if you want to have a client for life, you got to support their home, especially the business owner. And so that means I got to embrace the Apple ecosystem for iPhones. I'm not an Android person, but I'm becoming one because I have to, because there's too many Androids out there now, and there's an exodus from the Apple world I'm seeing on phones and coming to the Android side. I don't know if you're seeing it. I'm seeing it. And you know, guys that are traditional, they would only own an iPhone, now want nothing to do with it, you know, and are looking at Androids. So that's which is interesting, because I wanted to touch on your Android product, and that's a full release, right? That's not in beta or anything. That's out there now and people can buy it, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I got to go back to what you said on the Mac stuff, leaving money on the ground and literally not bending over to pick it up. I mean, that is such a great example of what's happening. We are seeing about a 230 to 240% increase of Mac malware year over year. And that's stats from just a month ago. And what we're really seeing, some of these shops who are, again, struggling with kind of the Windows machines that have been locked down, or they're staying, you know, quote unquote, malware free, or maybe they've got, you know, three machines that moved over to Mac. It's just a simple, hey, can I run a scan of your machine, use our free scanner, see if they have anything. And, you know, I use Lori Up in Chicago is such a great example. She's got probably 40% of her clients are Mac, and before our real-time protection, she just simply didn't have any software to offer them. And now she's, you know, outfitted them with a huge, you know, upswing in revenue for her. I mean, every time she's installing this, she's probably making 25, 30, 40 bucks right to her bottom line. And of course, our software is getting installed in there, but it's our keys work across all three platforms. So if you buy one key, it's Windows, Mac, or Android, and you're going to see even tighter integration of our keys over the next coming months. But any key bought after August 1st, it's triple platform, and y'all should be using that because it's money on the ground, as Mike said.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this could be the fastest turnaround for me for keys that my listeners know. I buy them at 100 a time, and Michael's going to love this. I'm ready for another 100 possibly, you know, and that was only like less than a month ago. So
that's really bad for the good people whose computers are getting messed up, but it's good for us to give us an opportunity to help them.
Well, I walk into an office that had 15 systems on last Monday, and it's like, oh, and it was, what a nightmare. It was, they had no consistent anti-malware, antivirus plan at all. It was all over the place. Expired versions of AVG, this, that. Some had nothing. And it was like, that's it. Clean, you know, rip out, you know, and we put malware bytes on all the systems. And I was like, boom, that's 15 keys right there. You know, so that I'm seeing, you know, where this is, I've been waiting for years to have a product that I liked, that I would recommend, that that can also, hey, if it can add to revenue, then, you know, that's win-win-win. So I want to get back. There's another question, which getting back to the scanning of the Malwarebytes product. And what is the difference between a threat scan and a hyper scan?
Think of that as unfortunate marketing that our industry is plagued with. So I'll start with that. So a hyper scan is going to be that initial scan, does what we consider to be a truly quick scan, and it's going to look at a variety of different components on the machine to give you that kind of cursory check to see if something's there and see if you need to dig in a little bit more. What we find traditionally is, you know, a machine that comes in looks kind of clean. The inform and the tool set doesn't really give you any indicators. Client's like, the machine's kind of running slow. It's always good to run that hyper scan first because it's quick, it's easy, just a couple minutes. You know, I mean, you could even write up their service order in the time that it takes to run inform, issue scanner, and our hyper scan. It's that fast. I'm talking under 5 minutes for all three of those. And then if you see something a little bit deeper, take them to that surgery analogy and move them kind of to that back room, and then run that threat scan. And then, of course, if you still are seeing some weird stuff going on in the machine, go ahead and dive in and do a full system scan, maybe add rootkit scanning at that point. And that's when you're really going to get into those multi-hour jobs. And you have to make that determination, you know, do you nuke and pave it at that point, or do you continue with the surgery that you're deep in?
Yeah, I kind of have a philosophy. If we're more than 2 hours to clean it, then we got to look at the nuke and pave option. And that's sort of, everybody's got to have that threshold and that cutoff, you know, that, and I look at it, it's really, it's system by system, because I got a user that his Outlook configuration is so complex, I don't want to redo that, you know? So,
exactly.
It's just, or do they even have all the original software and their licenses and their, you know, it's just, you know, nuke and pave. I really want that to be my last option, and I just can't. I just have to be able to fix it. I don't like losing, but I also, you can't bill. This is one of my biggest complaints with laptops and stuff, because I don't have a shop. I just have my home office, you know, for consulting. I had a laptop in here last weekend that, I mean, I was 7-8 hours cleaning it, you know, but I'm letting it run while I'm doing other things, but it was just, what a mess. And it was like, you know, I can never bill for that. I kind of have to flat fee the cleaning, because they could buy two laptops for what I would pay my rate, you know? So it's, that's why sometimes nuking and paving, though, you look at it. If it's the little old lady that all she has is some browsers and doesn't have a lot of data, yeah, that's a great option. You know, I can get the, you know, I can install Windows 10 in, you know, 15 minutes, you know, and go forward. And We just redid a laptop here this afternoon. I swear, my son, with full software and going to nine night and everything and getting it all done, he was under an hour. You know, it was a thing of beauty. So, and that was just a wipe of a laptop that's what they wanted, and didn't care about any data on it or anything because they had nothing on it. Anyway, couple things, and this question came before we even connected tonight for the show. There is an option that we mentioned on the Malwarebytes Premium called anti-ransomware. What is anti-ransomware doing? I mean, I know it's blocking the ransom. What? How are you preventing ransomware? Can you? Is it a secret sauce you can't share, or is it? You know, is there something that you can, you know, share with everybody? You know, what can you share?
Yeah, that's. So you guys, you know me by now. I don't really sugarcoat anything. So this is a difficult one for us to answer because we just can't give away our secret sauce. It's right. What I can tell you is we have a half a dozen or so very advanced technologies that we deploy against this. And it's, you know, some signatureless stuff, some heuristic stuff, and some, quite frankly, things that we've invented here, talking like patent pending type things. And we're just trying to keep that close to the vest right now, but we really feel we've got the best anti-ransomware on the market. We've something you'll notice with Malwarebytes is when, you know, our founder, Marcin, when he knows he's not good at something or doesn't have that technology or somebody else has beaten him to it, he'll partner with that technology. And you've seen that come to life over the last 2 years, specifically with the Mac software. That was an individual guy making that out in Ohio. Thomas Reed, if you know him, just phenomenal on the Mac side. We also acquired JRT, ADW Cleaner, and of course, some anti-ransomware technologies for things that, you know, we were good at a few things, but we were falling behind. And so we brought these really industry experts that just, quite frankly, leapfrogged us. And we said, hey, you guys have the same culture that we do, the same passion, but you're better at it than we are. So why don't we join forces? And we've done exactly that with half a dozen or so technologies, two in the ransomware space specifically.
Okay. So and I've talked about my ransomware infection where actually, you know, I thank Malwarebytes Day, and I gave you guys credit for helping me on the phone while I was on vacation and my team was battling a ransomware infection, which they were very, very, very lucky.
Yeah, they were lucky.
It was only one system that happened to get. Of course, it was the only system not running your software, and it's a shared system where literally anybody can walk in there and use, and it's on their network, and it happened to be mapped to a drive on a peer server that took out everything on that drive. But I had a great backup, and we were able to restore that. And then that system's literally sitting here waiting to be thrown out. I have to physically take the drive out, and he just wanted nothing to do with it, the owner. He says, take it out of here. I never want to see it again. We don't want anything on it. You know, and I was like, okay, that was great. You know, so, and you know what? That actually, you know, anytime there's a problem, even if it's a win, you have to take advantage of that opportunity. There are now procedures in place that I've been dying to implement where anybody that comes in, they can't just plug their laptop or into the network. Their IT, which is me, has to at least allow it, or you can take it over here and get on the public network. You're not allowed to plug it into the private network. And this was a big lesson on procedures, and that, you know, you have to take advantage of these opportunities. I'm always one to do that, and I like doing that with you know, and turn what could have been really bad into, wow, this could have been a lot worse. You know, I'll never forget. It's how you deliver news. I'll never forget this. So it's a story I don't know if I shared on my show even. So I'm in the corporate world managing big email servers, and the one server, we literally, because it was before that night's backup, crashed everything. We lost a day of mail because we had to go back to the night before. And so now I'm with the CFO or the CIO, who's now got to talk to the CFO to let him know what's going on. And I said, we only lost a day. See, that's if you walk in and say, yeah. Oh my God, we lost a day's mail. You know, no, it could have been a lot worse. We only lost a day. It's how you deliver bad news where you got to somehow still put that positive, you know, slant on it. And that's something that with this ransomware, this was actually a positive thing. We turned it into a positive thing. So that's what you have to do. You mentioned something at the unconvention, which is that you're not seeing, what is it? It's the viruses and the rootkits. You're just not seeing them as much. And I guess, can you share what are you seeing now from, you got, I can't even imagine how many deployments you have of your software. What threats are the biggest threats right now that we're seeing?
Yeah, what we mentioned at Unconvention is we are definitely seeing a decline in, you know, some of the traditional, we'll call them traditional viruses. So think of those like rootkits and kind of the older technologies. Doesn't mean that they're gone, but we are certainly seeing a decrease in that. And we try to produce kind of a state of malware bulletin, if you will, and it's that's available to anybody, not even, you know, tech members or anybody can, you know, join in and see what's there. But, you know, obviously Pum and Pups, the Mac malware that I mentioned, as well as we're starting to see some, you know, email scams, phishing is becoming really, really prevalent. I'll give you a couple examples that, you know, we're tracking here. One is this whole impersonation. So if you take a CEO and maybe a CFO at a company, they trade emails all day long about stuff and business and finance. And, you know, what they're trying to do is Marcin, our CEO and our CFO, Mark, you know, somebody will go to LinkedIn and scrape their pages and they'll figure out how to spoof Mark's email. And it'll be an email sent to Marcin saying, hey, Mark over here, you forgot to wire me that $40,000. Are you going to do it today? And it's just in a simple PDF. And Marcin's like, oh, yeah, my CFO needs $40,000. That's not a big deal. And so there was a big scam that went around about a year and a half ago. And we literally caught it live as it was going. So we've got a hard and fast rule that humans have to talk to humans in face, in person, before we transfer any dollar amount that's substantial coming out of our banks. But we're seeing that type of phishing attempt all over the place right now.
Yes. As a matter of fact, and guess what we're seeing? A huge uptick in the title insurance industry and the real estate industry, where they're monitoring an email and they are, and I can't believe, and this happened with a client, and I actually took advantage of the upsell. I'll tell you in a second that the guy, I can't believe the agent's using Comcast and his mail's compromised and he doesn't know it. And the person at the other end was then, and this is just when this transaction should be happening, and they were given instructions in changes to where to wire the money. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was like they inserted themselves right in the middle of the process at the right time. So this is really scary. And this is a big problem with in the title insurance business. So you're right. You have to have a human talk to, you know, for confirmation and read back where you're going to send this, you know, and then and do it. You can't do it electronically. So what was the big problem here? Well, they weren't sending an encrypted email. So I have vendors that I work with that can provide encrypted email. They're now all encrypted email, where that person's going to go to a portal and see that, where they verified who they are, and they're not going to get at least... we lessen the chances of that happening. So yeah, we have to stay on top of it by putting all these things in place. So what about, I guess ransomware is the scariest, you know, that's the one that I've had three battles with ransomware since it's come out, and I've won all of them. So that's only because of backups, and I've been very fortunate. But email scams is, you're right. Here you go. I'll give you another one. And I told this story last week. Let's say the guy's name, it wasn't, but it's John at AOL. They AOL, their email's compromised. They get their address book and they're sending it out J0HN at it. And so now they've spoofed for the reply. You think you're replying. So, oh, sure. here you go, John, where do you need the money sent? You know? And now you have the bad guy at the other end receiving the email because they're spoofing using numbers for letters. And I'm like, oh no. And this is, you know, I'm battling this. A client, I knew right away when I got the client would never ask me for money in an emergency situation. And I'm like, oh no, I see the email and it was well written. And I'm like, oh no. And I called him right away and he's like, no, you know, so we had a, you know, that was a lot of work, you know, fixing that. But how do you stop that except for education, you know, for, I mean, there's no, you know, tell me you got a magic product that's going to help, but.
I do. It's communication and education. That's one of the layers that I, at least personally for me, that's the one I over educate people. So a lot of people, you know, ask me for feedback on like two-factor authentication and passwords and the Equifax stuff. And, you know, it's, you know, an extra step that I take. I don't tell people, you know, create complex passwords and different passwords and all of that. I focus just on two-factor at first to help them understand one of the many layers of the password strategy. Because trying to explain to them that whole password strategy that I just gave you there, way over their heads. But give me something concrete that actually makes a difference, like enabling two-factor on every account that is two-factor. And yes, there's pros and cons in some of the two-factor spoofing and the mobile numbers, but two-factor is better than crappy passwords and crappy usernames that are used across multiple devices.
Yep. Hey, someone just mentioned CCleaner. Do you have any insight into what's going on there? I mean, I've just like avoiding it right now with all that.
Wow. Yeah. It's okay, so I'm going to put on my Sherwood hat, not Malwarebytes hat for a second. So just as a technician, that was like, holy smokes. When I saw that and just the engineering that it must have taken to kind of sneak that in as a Trojan horse, if you will, in the app. And just to see it on that level of an app that's been around, you know, 10 plus years, tens of millions of downloads, just acquired, you know, recently in the last couple of months. As a technician, I don't know if I can say this on the air, but I was like, holy shit, that's bad. That's really bad. On the Malwarebytes side, you know, obviously we sprung into action and started blocking that. It's unfortunate, but it was a piece of malware that was in the app. And, you know, the unsuspecting user was essentially getting a drive-by and they didn't even know it. So I do feel bad for that type of company taking that type of hit, but it's it just shows you that nobody's really safe out there.
No. Exactly. And especially, you know, it was shocking. When I seen that, I was like, oh my gosh. And we use CCleaner all the time. We would. So that's, but one thing, I always use the portable version, which is good. So that means it's never lingering around. And even if we did use the full version, we uninstall it, you know?
Yeah.
So we don't leave anything around. That's why I love portable utilities like your tool set. You know, we want to run them from a USB stick. Now, I got a question. And so now I'm a legitimate TechBench licensed tool set user, but I don't have internet access and I want to use your tool on a system. How does it verify my license?
Yeah, so we, as I mentioned, hopefully this is coming through clear on the call here, is, you know, Alex, myself, our engineers, literally everybody on the team, we've been technicians and for many years. So if we build something and it's annoying for you, that's a really big shame on us, because we miss something obvious. So, you know, thinking about offline access is something that's very important to us. Portability is very important. I go home for, you know, Thanksgiving, or I travel to see my friends and their whole house is like broken, and I need something that just works, and I don't have time to register and license and all that crap. So we try to give you enough of a leeway to make sure that when you hit those situations, that, you know, you're not going weeks and weeks and weeks without updating it. So we do force you to update, you know, think of it like once a week, every 4 days or so, we require you to check in with our servers to make sure that you've got the latest definitions, the latest updates. And, you know, the other reason for that is we're super liberal with our licensing. And, you know, even though it's, you know, quote unquote unlimited, That does get capped at a certain time. So, but it's hundreds and hundreds of uses per technician per year, more than about 300% more than the average technician is showing us that they're fixing. So we're not there to, you know, spy on you to make sure you're using the license within specs, because we know you are, but we want to make sure you get the right updates and the right definitions. And our licensing is anywhere from 48 to 96 hours that it requires you to check in.
Okay. So I can, if the person doesn't, if we have no internet access, I can still use the tool set on a one-off system, like one system, you know, because the internet's broken or we can't get out, you know? So that's, all right. Cause I know it, cause where did we see it? My son was using it here and there was something, we weren't connected cause it said it's trying to go out to verify, you know, its license or something, you know? And that's what made me think of that question. Cause, I mean, most of the time everybody has internet access, you know, but, you know, let's face it. If the system's in distress, there's a good chance it won't. So what else can you share that you would like to share with the Mike Tech Show audience? Is there anything, you know, that's coming up that we can share, or improvements we're looking for, or I'm just kind of like, you know, throwing it out there for whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, you know, the whole goal with TechBench is not to you know sell a bunch of software to all of you, or to, you know, sell some $500 utility or something like that. Our goal is really, we've always said quid pro quo, you know, so you scratch our back, we scratch your back. And so what we're trying to do is give a couple of really cool things to the technicians. And in return, you know, what's in it for Malwarebytes? We want, you know, Malwarebytes on as many endpoints as possible. That's our goal. We're not hiding that. That's very, very apparent. But before we do that, one, we want to gain your trust, which is why we've hired basically Alex, me, and the rest of the technically minded folks to really understand and kind of know who all of you are. And so we actually want a relationship with you. And if you want to continue, that's great. We've got some awesome offers inside of TechBench. It's a really reasonable cost. And, you know, with that, you get access to all the great software that we have. Plus, you get 25 copies of Malwarebytes at about $14 a pop that you can easily turn around. And if you were to sell 8 copies of Malwarebytes, which is our goal, by the way, if you sold about 8 copies of Malwarebytes, you'd recoup all of your money for the year. And then you'd basically be using all of our software for free for the rest of the year with your clients. So again, we're not out to try to make a quick buck. We're out to learn about your business, see what you're doing, and then help you grow it. Like the case with Lori, you know, in Chicago, she, unconvention this year, it was kind of a Mac aha moment for her. And like I said, now she's got 40% of the machine she's touching. She's got an additional $25, $30 that she can make. That's, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
And the year before, she was struggling in how to kind of break into some of her markets. So Alex and myself jumped on a call with her and said, well, why don't you do a, you know, like an open house. And so we gave her some password and some identity theft kind of speaking points. And she had a huge open house in her community and offered her kind of free services for a couple hours. And that turned into, I think, about 30 or 40 clients for her a year later.
No, that's great. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I connected with Lori, who Michael's talking about, she is not a server person and was afraid for a server problem for a client. And I said, I could do that remotely with you. I said, I can help you. Don't walk away from those opportunities because you've now made the connection. You know, I can help you with that remotely. So that's, and we'll both make money, you know, and I think that's what's great about this community. And what I try to do with this very show, I'm a conduit. I look at myself between problems and solutions, and they, you know, I can't answer everything, but I'll try to put them in place, you know, and then share my stories. And then share my stories. And that's something I think I've communicated really well about you guys and meeting you at the last unconventions, where having that connection with a vendor is incredible, and it's just great. And I don't use this term lightly, but a partnership, which is what I get what you're trying to do in the vision, and I'm there, and I want to be part of it. And that's what I think is great. And I think it's going to help everybody who's listening, who's in this, you know, in this business, that, you know, you gotta have partnerships with vendors and products. So this way you could, A, yeah, you're going to make money, but B, it's going to be a way for you to get great access to for help. I told the story, Alex, on that Saturday night where, man, you helped me with a problem, and I couldn't license it. It was a malware bytes would not register, and it was a legitimate key, and I'm putting it in, and it just won't. It was a window. I sent the logs, and Alex, on a Saturday night, it was a Windows certificate problem on the workstation, and I'm like, oh, man. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know, and I was able to solve that. I would have never thought that. How did that get changed? I'm thinking, you know, on a system where there's registry keys, you know, that had nothing to do with your software. But,
yep.
But it's being able to have these connections to, and we've done. As a matter of fact, Marv, I don't know if you know, MB Systems Inc. is Marvin B. in the chat.
So, oh, yeah, we saw him creeping in there.
So, which is great. He's my, you know, if there's a networking problem that I can't solve, and I can solve a lot, that's going to be, that's my first call is going to be to Marvin, you know? So, and that's the relationship that I think you guys are seeing, and you want that with all these techs, you know, which is, don't be afraid and have access. You're not alone. And this is a great community that we're building here, and it just makes it so much easier for us to solve problems and work together. So that's anyway. I start to wrap up here because this is great. I want to thank you guys so much for taking the time to come on the show. I really appreciate it. That it was tremendous, and I got a question. I know. You're not from California, so you out there for a special, you know, any kind of special, you know, project or something that you can share or no, or just how often do you go back out there? I was just curious. Like, you guys travel a lot.
So for people that don't know, I mean, Malwarebytes is based out of Silicon Valley here in California, and Sherwood actually originally is from where I'm from, which is right outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I'm actually here in town. We're having some, we'll say, engineering and product team discussions, working out our roadmaps and coming up with cool new things and making sure we're all aligned on some of the stuff that we're going to be working on over the next year or two. So
that's awesome.
Unfortunately, you can't share all the cool little secrets and the stuff we're working on, but we got some really cool, excuse my language here, really cool shit coming.
No, it's great. And I look forward to hearing as you're allowed to share. Tremendous. That's we want to see that, you know, which is great. Well, I thank you for joining me on the Mike Tech Show tonight, and for everybody, thank you so much for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. I'll be back here next week, same time, same channel. Bye bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.